Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th of August, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Dave's got a new toy. We'll be talking about that later, too, because he can't stop grinning from ear to ear. But we'll start with the news. One of the most interesting topics in the app market right now is the divergence between iPhone and iPad application markets. Over the past 18 months, the top-grossing iPad game chart has clearly started slanting towards your mom. At number one, we have Dragonvale, which I cannot get my daughter off of, a game that gives you the ability to grow and breed dragons that are adorably cute. At number four, Mystery Manor Hidden Adventure leads a recent surge of hidden object games. These types of adventures rely on the player looking at pictures full of different items and spotting treasures that drive the plot progression. 50-year-old women from Minnetonka fell in love with the genre years ago, and the hidden object games now dominate Yahoo Games and other mainstream video game portals. Then at number five and number eight, we find Bingo Bash and Slotomania, archetypal granny games. At number two and number six are the reasonably gender-neutral New York Times and comics apps, the former slanting female, the latter slightly male. What about the manly iPad games for men? Well, at number three, there's Kingdom of Camelot. It features savage Picts and a widowed queen who begs for your help. CSR Racing at number seven gives you the chance to upgrade your Audi R8, BMW M3, or Chevy Corvette with turbos, nitrous injection, and aerodynamic tweaks. At number nine, Kingdom Age provides competitive siege warfare. So female apps lead male apps by a 4-3 ratio in the top 10 and by a 3-1 ratio in the top 5, with one being kind of general gender neutral. What's most fascinating is how the top grossing iPad chart differs from the paid and free app charts on the top paid and free app devices on the same device. Those charts are dominated by exactly what you would expect: Dark Knight Rises, Walking Dead, Minecraft, Shellraiser, Spy vs. Spy, Catapult King, Jurassic Park Builder, and of course, Where's My Perry? Okay, you guys aren't Phineas and Ferb.
Perry the Platypus.
Franchises that are male-oriented, except, of course, for Where's My Perry, which we'll give it a gender neutral. But those big franchises have one major shortcoming. They don't generate as much revenue as the granny games. Walking Dead and Jurassic Park may score high when it comes to app download volumes, but the middle-aged women cough up serious change for Mystery Manor and Bingo Bash in-app purchases, giving the fem apps a leg up on male mega-franchises when it comes to actual revenue generation. At the moment, the most likely iPad users are between 25 and 44 years old, but the fastest-growing demos are both the under-12 and over 65 groups. Advice to app developers targeting the iPad: forget about young males and target older women. Which leads us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, middle-aged women are taking over the iPad. And the choices are, you're dang right we are, sonny. MILF, many iPads love 50-somethings. No, we middle-aged men love them too. Android and pen and paper going retro, baby. So far, we have 36 votes. And as I would suspect from the Soundbites listener, pen and paper wins, followed by Android, followed by MILF, followed by no, we middle-aged men love them too. And no middle-aged women have admitted that they are looking at the iPad. When you're done with the poll, boy, do I know you'll have more to say about this one. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com, where you can enter your opinion to do you think the iPad is for middle-aged women? And obviously we have had one person make the obvious joke. Obvious jokes bore me. So we'll move on from there. And, of course, that's our question to you. Do you think the iPad is for iPad is for middle-aged women. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Not that I don't even know what middle-aged means anymore. I personally am 62 years old, but I have not yet had my midlife crisis, so I'm going to be at live to be at least 124.
Yeah, you don't know what your middle age is until you actually die.
That's right.
You have to work backwards.
Yeah, right. Your middle age could be 30 or 90. You just you don't know. But have you heard of this thing before? That
well, I've heard of this in different advertising and marketing classes that. Women have traditionally controlled the purse strings. That, you know, man makes the money, but he's got to approve his expenses with his wife. So you really should be targeting new cars and you know, in the 50s, the women's advertising was all for, you know, dishwashers and kitchen appliances. And that's sort of where it started shifting, that realizing that women in the workforce are a buying influence as well. And then, as any married man can tell you, you know, the woman has to agree to let you buy anything.
Right.
Well, we see that a lot in our shop. When the man comes in to buy something, he's got to let his wife buy something too.
Right. Or you see guys at the stores on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
Is this the right one, honey?
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, what we see a lot on the Android side as well as on the iPad side is that men can make little purchases for themselves. So if you buy a $4.99 game,
yeah,
that's okay, or a $2.99, or a 99-cent game.
Yep.
But I think they're right. In-app purchases seem to be from every because once I read that story, I did a lot of other research, and every single unless they're all quoting the same one guy, and they don't seem to be. Every research thing I've looked at says, women. The apps that hit females and mostly older females, the typical demographic would be older females, the in-app purchases are significantly higher than for any other demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes kind of along with the massive resurgence of romance novels.
Yeah.
Romance novels used to be really big, and then they stopped being really big because people were embarrassed to be seen reading them.
They went underground, sort of.
Now you can read them as an ebook, and nobody knows what you're reading. So they've come back massively. You know, you could write a book a day and into this crowded market and still make money. It's pretty amazing, actually. But I don't know. I don't know. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
How are you surviving this heat, guys?
By staying indoors. How about you?
Me too. Got a question. I've got a Windows XP desktop, and I got a Windows 7 laptop. My printer died. Okay. I want to buy a wireless printer, but I want to be able to use it on my iPad. Now, my question to you is, should I set it up with my desktop or should I set it up with my Windows 7 laptop? And which one would you recommend?
I would go with hooking it directly up to your desktop.
To get a network wireless printer, you don't have to hook it to any computer.
Okay.
That's part of the point of having a wireless printer.
Right, but if it's going to be sitting somewhere and it does run a little faster over wired versus wireless.
Yeah, but she'll have a tougher time getting to it with the iPad.
It has to be wireless for the iPad.
Right.
And then many printers, I see this a lot with HP, that if you have the wire connected, it turns off the wireless. So if you want it to be wireless, it can't. You plug in, I just was setting up a new HP 8100 for a customer this week.
Okay.
You plug in the USB, you run your setup procedure, you tell the setup assistant you want it to be a wireless printer, and then it says, okay, I'm setting the changes in the printer. Now you have to unplug the USB or it won't work.
Hmm. Right. So once you unplug the USB, so it doesn't matter which machine you set it up with. Once you follow the instructions and unplug it at the right moment, it becomes a completely wireless printer and it's not connected to any machine anywhere except by wireless.
Okay. Now my question to you then is, my XP is kind of like a dinosaur and I only use it as a music library.
Right.
Would it be better to just, because I've got a laptop right next to it, would it be better to just set it up to my Windows 7 laptop?
Set it up with the Windows. You're not setting it up into the laptop. You're setting it up with the laptop, just using that as a way to get the drivers in and get it on the network. Once it's on the network and you disconnect it, it's not really associated with the Windows 7 laptop anymore.
Okay.
So even if you were to sell that laptop, you would still be able to get to the wireless printer because it is now fully wireless.
Should I get one that's network ready?
That's what wireless means. It is network ready with wireless built in. There are two types of networking. There's wired networking and there's wireless networking. Most printers that have wireless also have Ethernet wired networking, but not always. But since you want it to work on your iPad, you need to get a wireless printer that has the AirPrint technology. And that's the buzzword to look for is AirPrint.
Okay, now my question to you, Steve, is I want to go to Best Buy and buy it. Which one would you recommend?
Well, there's too many choices.
Depends.
I don't want to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, there's ink and there's laser, and then there's printer only, and then there's printer, copy, or fax.
No, I just want print. I don't need the fax and all that stuff.
Well, even some of the inexpensive wireless printers, you can get a pretty decent printer around $100 for an inkjet wireless printer without adding all the extra all-in-ones.
Is that the printer is cheaper, but in the long run, you spend more money on consumables because the ink is very expensive.
That's what they're hoping for.
So you may want to look at a laser printer, which may cost a little more to begin with. We've got a couple in our store. HP's got a really nice wireless laser printer for like $169, I think it is. And that because it's laser, the consumables are much less expensive. You get 4,000 or 5,000 pages out of a single toner cartridge.
Wow.
Instead of a couple of hundred pages out of an ink cartridge.
Okay, but now is there a specific brand I should look for that's got better? Because I've done a lot of research and all that, and they say that HP seems to be the best one to get. But as I said, I don't know anything about these things. All I know, you know.
Yeah. HP tends to get pretty good reviews for text quality.
And drivers.
And drivers. Epson usually gets better reviews in color photograph reproduction.
Yeah, because I want to print like greeting cards.
Yeah. Well, then you're probably going to want a color printer.
And then
it's ink. Yeah.
Jets are cheaper. Yeah.
When you look at color laser, HP, we sell a lot of HP printers too. HP's got a nice color laser in the 300 range. So it's relatively inexpensive. I remember color lasers were $50,000 when they hit the market, and people were excited because it wasn't the $1 million color printer that you used to have to buy.
Right.
You know, this is my mother's buying this. So
yeah.
So I'd like something maybe between $100 and $150, you know.
Yeah, you'll find quite a few models in that range, but you want to make sure that it has that AirPrint or some of them will just say iPad on them.
What she should, because she's saying she's going to print greeting cards. That means that kind of sets out in my mind a lot of ink. So you got to start comparing. Like Steve said, it's going to be $300 for a colored laser, but when it comes to doing color, if you're going to be doing greeting cards and all that type of stuff, is it cheaper to be buying those little ink wells?
Yep.
You know, HP, you got to buy all three at once. Or versus going through a laser printer.
Yeah,
laser printer.
The HP
weigh the cost.
The HP 8100 I was playing with the other day had really big ink tanks, and some of the printer companies are realizing that, and so the bigger tanks are cost less in consumables. One of the problems you find, especially with greeting cards, is you typically want to print them on heavier stock.
Mm-hmm.
With most HP printers, the paper goes in the front, has to make a 180-degree turn, and comes out the front.
No,
that doesn't work very well with heavy cardstock. So you may want to look for one that has a rear paper exit. So it goes in the front, comes out the rear.
And the paper doesn't bend.
I've been printing cards just on regular paper. And I don't print a lot of greeting cards, maybe once a month. So, so I'm just looking, because I thought this happened on Wednesday, and I haven't used my printer. And I thought to myself, well, I'll call the guys and ask them.
Yeah.
But now I'm really confused as to what I should buy.
Well, there's just a lot of choices. But I'll tell you what: if you're looking for something that will print color, then you absolutely must get either a very expensive in the $300 range laser printer or a cheaper in the $150 range. Or $100 range inkjet printer. in the long run, if you do a lot of printing...
I don't.
Right. Okay, but if you did, mm-hmm. then the inkjet printer would cost you more money in the long run.
And that can actually be a problem with inkjet printers. If you don't use them enough, the ink dries up. And then when you print, it's got to clean the heads and uses a lot of your ink that you didn't use.
Right.
Yeah, there's no easy answer here, Linda. I wish there were. But what you if you're printing once a week or so?
Yeah, basically.
That shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Okay, one more quick question, then I'll get off.
Yep.
I know Android, I was looking to buy a tablet, okay?
Yeah.
And now they've got ice cream sandwich, which has Flash. So I was in the store yesterday, and the gentleman says, well, you know, Jelly Beans are going to be coming out, not going to support Flash. Well, I've got an iPad which doesn't support Flash. I want something that's going to put... So what do you do now?
Nothing.
Now the Jelly Beans coming out.
Nobody's supporting Flash anymore.
Right, and including Adobe. Adobe has stopped the development of Flash.
But a lot of these websites say you need Flash, so what do you do?
The website has to change.
They simply will be unreachable soon by anybody because Adobe is stopping Flash... Stopping production of Flash. They're just not going to offer it anymore. Nobody will have Flash. Your laptop won't have it. Your desktop won't have it. Your tablet won't have it. Those websites are going to have to change.
Yeah, because I saw one that was really nice. It was the Acer Iconia. It was a really nice one.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned. We have to take a break right now, but a little later we'll talk about Dave's new toy and my almost new toy. But we're going to take a break right now, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. And for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we're going to go to Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, good afternoon, guys.
It is that.
It's going to be a scorcher.
It's already a scorcher. Who are you kidding?
Yeah, it's going to be 95 and humid, so that's a scorcher.
Perfect.
I retired an old Samsung ML2010 laser printer. We're back to laser printers.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine needed a printer. I lent it to him. He has an HP notebook... 2000-417NR, and he's running Windows 7 64-bit. Obviously, the drivers I have for that printer are very old, the 8-10-year-old printer. When I try to install them on his laptop, it says it can install them but cannot communicate with the printer. If you turn the printer on, you hear the chord that says, yes, you started it. When you turn it off, you hear the chord that says, okay, you've disconnected. But I cannot get the printer to actually communicate with the laptop.
Now, you downloaded the 64-bit drivers for that particular printer?
They don't have. I didn't see any 64-bit.
Then you can't use the printer.
Then you can't use the printer. And there lies the challenge.
There's no 32-bit option on the 64-bit XP.
Not on printers are pretty particular.
Okay. I do know I have the on my Windows 7. I have the option of doing a. What is it? It's not the. It's like XP mode.
There is a printer driver for it, version 9.6 from 2009, for both Windows 7 32 and 64-bit.
Yeah. Go to the Samsung website, and sometimes it's tricky to find, especially a company like Samsung, which sells refrigerators, cranes, and computers, to find exactly the right one.
Being the 64-bit, it's still consistent with the fact that when you turn it on, it gives you the chord. Turn it off when it gives you the chord. You know how when you turn on a piece of hardware, it'll say, hey, something's just turned on.
Yeah. Right, right, right. Yep. Well, it's a Windows 7 64-bit driver, so it should do everything you need it to do. Steve can put up the link. You'll then click on the little drivers tab and go down until you see the printer driver that's for Windows 7.
All right, I appreciate it, guys.
All right, but that's you really, unfortunately, just because both machines, both operating systems are called Windows, doesn't actually make them both Windows.
Yeah.
For drivers, there's a big difference internally.
There's different flavors now, chocolate and vanilla.
Right,
32
and particularly
64.
When it's 64-bit versus 32.
Yep.
In some cases, XP drivers will work on Windows 7. In some cases, they will not. And certainly, they won't work if it's a 64-bit driver, if it's a 64-bit operating system.
All right, guys. I appreciate your time. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Yep.
Samsung is quite a different company than Samsung.
Yes. Yes, it is. You'll want to go to Samsung. Just here's the URL.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. But yeah, in general, folks, that's an important distinction. If you've just upgraded to a Windows 7 operating system, or more importantly, bought a new computer with a Windows 7 operating system, your old drivers that come on your old CDs from your old peripherals may not, in fact, work.
That is one of the things I do like about the HP and Brother installers. When you put the disk in, it says, do you want me to check on the internet for latest drivers? Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, and they will do that automatically. All right, our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Greetings, gentlemen.
Greetings.
I realize I could Google this or go to Microsoft.com, but I keep forgetting. Since I'm riding around listening to you guys, I thought I'd take the easy way out and ask you.
Sure.
I'm running XP 32-bit, which I'll run until either I die or the machine dies.
Right.
I've been perfectly happy with IE7 for a long, long time, but every now and then on certain websites I get a nag that says, you know, YouTube's the one example that, you know, in a while we're not going to support IE7 anymore and upgrade to IE8.
Right.
Which I kind of hesitate to do because it has all kinds of crap in it that I know I won't use, like accelerators and slices and websites and all this junk. And it claims to be safer, but I doubt if it's any.
Well, it is much, but go ahead. What seems to be?
Well, my question is if I go ahead and do the upgrade to 8, I know I can uninstall it. What I'm worried about is will I lose all my settings that I've changed in IE7, and particularly all the favorites?
Well, certainly you won't lose your. Well, you want to be careful. Whenever you install any device, one of the questions that you get asked is, do you want to move over all your settings from Windows 7, from IE7.
Right.
If you say no to that, you're done.
Oh. Well, as usual, be careful. Like, do you want to install the Yahoo toolbar?
Right, exactly. Be careful of what you say yes or no to.
Right.
The other thing you can also do as a hedge, and I think this will work, is you can install another browser, like Chrome or Firefox. And in the installation of that, if you're careful, it will also ask you, do you want to move all your stuff over from IE7? And you can do that. So now you'll have it in two places. So even if you screw up the installation of IE8, you've still got all that other stuff, which you can port over at a later date.
Okay.
So yeah, just as a kind of a backup.
Change the settings again. And, of course, I could export all the favorites and, you know, re-import them.
That's then not a bad backup, not a bad hedge.
Yeah.
Can you even get IE8 now that 9 is out?
That's a really good
9
question.
Won't run on XP, is my understanding.
Well, that doesn't answer my question, though. Might not be able to get it.
Yeah, I think you still can.
You still can get 8? Yeah. Let me dig around, see if I can find it.
Look at old programs. Do a search.
Yeah, it might not be available at Microsoft, but it might be at oldsoftware.com or oldversions.com.
Yep.
IE9?
IE8. See, now that 9 is out, Microsoft may have stopped distributing 8.
I haven't even considered that.
No, it's there.
I do get nags from various websites.
Yeah.
It's yeah, there. No, it, well, do it soon because at some point, Microsoft will drop, has already, I believe, dropped IE6 and is in the process of dropping IE7. So
IE8 was released in May of 2009. So
right,
that's
so it's
soon
already
to be
3 years old. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll either limp along with 7 if they don't have 8 available or... you know, like you said, I'll check and do it quick.
Go to Firefox.
Yep. Do it quick or move to Firefox or Chrome.
I've tried Firefox, and I'm not impressed
well,
it's
with a, it.
Well,
and that's my point. You can
it.
Certainly use, you know, as long as 8 is available and they're supporting it, use 8. But be aware that at some point, they may even stop supporting 8, at which point you'll be forced to move.
Well, that just means no more enhancements or improvements.
Yeah, right. Well, and no more fixes to security issues.
Right, right.
Which is the really important part.
Yeah. Okay.
All right?
Thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
Bye.
Didn't I read something about a service pack was going to upgrade you to IE8 automatically at some point?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yep. We did have one text come in here. Casey from Rochester asked a question. Is there a video format that I can rip/convert DVDs that will maintain the original chapters?
That depends entirely on the software
you use. It has nothing to do with the format. It's the software you use. I know Handbrake does.
Handbrake does. There are several products that do it. Roxio has a version that does it. These are paid.
There's a lot of
products.
Well, Handbrake is free. There's a lot of, I hate to say fake, but there's a lot of DVD video conversion programs on the internet that are basically taking the open source FFmpeg, which is the granddaddy of all of these video converters, and selling it under hundreds of different names for various prices between $20 and $100. And when the ads all look the same. It's like there's a company that sells 100 products with different names of the same thing.
Right.
And they spam user forums all the time. So if you Google convert a DVD to play in my computer, you're going to find all of these spammed forums where this company gets on a forum and asks, how do I create a DVD? And then answers it with a different username with an ad for their software. So it's very difficult to find legitimate information in the midst of all this stuff. Handbrake is Mac and Windows. Let me make sure. They might even have a Unix version. But one of the things Handbrake did, since commercial DVDs are encoded and encrypted, Mac, Windows, and Ubuntu for Handbrake.
Huh, I may have to download.
Yeah, since commercial DVDs are encrypted, they have to be decrypted before they can be ripped on your computer. But your computer has a decryption key built into the DVD player. So that sort of defeated the whole purpose of the encryption to begin with. And that goes back to the old DVD John. It's probably the guy that wrote the Ubuntu version. He had a Linux machine. He wanted to play a DVD. So he wrote a DVD decryptor. And the music or video industry sued him. So what Handbrake has done is they stopped including a DVD decryptor. And they'll use the one from VLC.
Right,
because VLC plays DVDs on your computer as well.
Right,
And for the Mac, there's another program called Ripit, which is very easy to use. One of the nice things for some people, but confusing things for other people, is Handbrake gives you thousands of different options about what you want to convert it to, what format. So you can do, you know, a small phone version, you can do a tablet version. There's a company, the Little App Factory makes, I think it's Little App Factory, Ripit. And that has a big button that says rip. And so novice, yeah, a little app factory. Novice users like that one because it's just a big button that says rip. And it converts it. Now, the other thing is you don't actually need a ripper. You can just drag and copy that entire DVD onto your computer. And it will play from your computer. It's the full probably 8 gigabytes worth of space, but you get full quality then too. Most of these ripper programs will recompress the file to make them smaller so that they play better on phones and tablets.
Somebody else just commented and said, yeah, Handbrake's the easiest.
I don't know about easiest, but it does give you the most options. And it has presets. So if you know you're going to go to your iPhone, or you're going to go to a 7-inch tablet or a 10-inch tablet, there's presets built in for it. And it's free. Currently, it's at handbrake.fr. Let me get back to that, and we'll post the link shortly. Because the movie industry tends to try to sue it out of existence, it oftentimes bounces around to different hosts. So right now they're hosted in France.
Right.
But, so you can just copy the DVD to your hard drive. It's the full 8 gigs. Or you can use a program like Handbrake to recompress it into a smaller format so then it doesn't take up as much space on your mobile device.
Did that help?
Hopefully. It was a text.
Yeah, that was a text.
Oh, that was a text.
Yep.
Then I have to shout louder.
There you go. No, he's listening.
Yep.
So. Well, we got a few minutes to talk about your toy.
It's all your fault.
It is all my fault. I have led you down the path more than once in the computer world.
I know. This starting to get scary. First it was the internet.
Uh-huh.
And then...
And there were a couple pieces of software here and there.
And then there was the... going to the smartphone, which
right.
I finally had to get to that because our boss, illustrious boss, Rob, I finally wound up going over to a smartphone.
Right.
And playing around with all the different apps and that I could do there. And after looking at your tablet...
Uh-huh.
I did a little more research, well, quite a bit of research, and checking other tablets out there and, you know, what was available. And, you know, there's a lot of good ones out there with Jelly Bean on it. You can get anywhere from the 7 to the 10-inch, you know, Jelly Bean tablets. But a lot of them are, you got to look at the memory. The memory was usually either averaging between 512 and 256.
Right.
And then, yeah, you could add an SD card and everything else. And like I was saying last week, you know, I started really evaluating.
But an SD card is storage, not RAM. There's
right.
It's like the difference between the memory in your computer and the hard drive in your computer.
Right. And I started thinking, you know, because my choice going with yours was, you know, you could get the 8 or the 16 gig. Both are available now. And I really started thinking, how much space do I really need on it? And started thinking things out, and I wound up going with the 8 gig Nexus 7 tablet.
And it doesn't even have Jelly Bean. It has ice cream sandwich. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's Jelly Bean.
It's Jelly Bean.
4.1.1. And, oh, yeah. Different flavors. So I wound up, you know, after seeing yours and playing with yours, I pulled the trigger and ordered it last Tuesday. It arrived yesterday. And as you saw, I've got quite a bit loaded. I love it.
It's magic. You just put in your Gmail account information, and it loaded everything for you.
And it was unbelievable. It already knew that I had a Gmail account.
Well, you have to put two pieces of information in: your Gmail account information and your wireless information.
Well, on the Gmail, it already knew
who you were because
I already
put that in for you, but not the password.
Right. I had to put the password in, and then it connected me to my wireless network. It said, "Oh, wait a minute. Enet is here. Put in the password, please."
That's exactly right.
Boom. It did that.
Once you've done those two things, you're done.
And then it like came alive. Across the top, it's starting to download. If you've ever done downloads to your smartphone or to a tablet, you know, the little symbols that you can see, and it's downloading all these apps. I'm thinking, wait a minute. I didn't even pick anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
It already knew a lot of the apps from my phone. So it was dropping that down. So I go to the website on my computer, and it already knew both my smartphone and the tablet, and you can pick between them and which you want installed on what. Because by default, it was syncing with a lot of my stuff that I already had, and I went back and said, no, let's do a little cleanup because
right.
I don't need all this stuff on this tablet. I got quite a bit on it already. All right. And as you saw, I got tons of apps on here, some games and everything else and other utilities. And I still have over 5.25 gig free.
Yeah.
And I've already got three books on here. And I, again, started setting up this morning Picasa to go get my pictures, have the pictures up there so I don't have to have them on here. But I Anywhere I am, I can get at them.
I put all my music in Google Music, and so I don't have to have it on my device.
Yeah.
And its 7-inch tablet make is so convenient. I can actually slip it right in my pocket when I'm walking around. It fits in any bag I happen to be carrying. It's lightweight. It's easy to carry. I love it. It's a good size to see, and I just really like it. All right, we're going to take another break. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And like I said, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And those of you using Dropbox might want to pay attention to this one. When a few hundred Dropbox users began receiving spam emails about online casinos and gambling sites a couple of weeks ago, it seemed like something was up. And indeed, there was. The online file storage service confirmed on Tuesday that hackers accessed usernames and passwords from third-party sites and then used them to get into Dropbox users' accounts. Our investigation found that usernames and passwords recently stolen from other websites were used to sign onto a small number of Dropbox accounts. We've contacted those users and have helped them protect their accounts, the company wrote in a blog. A stolen password was also used to access an employee Dropbox account containing a project document with user email addresses. We believe this improper access is what led to the spam. When the problem first began earlier this month, several Dropbox users posted on the company's website forum saying they received spam from email addresses only associated with Dropbox. By the time the company got hold of the situation, 295 people had posted on the forum. The majority of the users were European, coming from Germany, Holland, and the UK. Dropbox has since put in place additional security controls to avoid a repeat occurrence. According to the company blog, here are some of the steps it is taking. Two-factor authentication, which is a way to optionally provide two proofs of identity, such as your password and a temporary code sent to your phone when signing in. That's going to be coming in a few weeks. New automated mechanisms to help identify suspicious activity. A new page that lets you examine all active logins to your account. And in some cases, Dropbox may be requiring people to change their password. The file storage service also recommends that users avoid using the same password on multiple sites, something we've been saying here for years. Since it means that if one site has a security breach, then all accounts could be at risk. As TechCrunch notes, Dropbox's security breach is eerily reminiscent of LinkedIn's mega password leak in June, not that the two are related or even on the same scale. So, do you use Dropbox? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
At least it's got a comfortable chair.
Finally. Yeah, good. We a lot of our faculty use Dropbox at work. I've been trying to tell them not to, but it's convenient, and that's more important than security.
And it was one of the first easy to use, convenient file sharing.
Right.
So there's a lot of inertia there.
Right. So Google if Drive they get hacked, they get hacked. That's all there is to that. Nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, but that Google Drive though, we've been talking about that for a while now, and. You know, the security is great.
There's not as much third-party support yet in other applications.
Right.
Well, see, now it's not a problem on the Android tablets because it's built in there, but yeah. On the Apple tablets, Dropbox was one of the first easiest ways to share information between your computer and your tablet.
And it is a very easy way for you and 100 other people to share documents. Yes, I completely agree with that. The problem is from the very beginning. This is not the first breach they've had. And from the very beginning, they've been insecure.
Yeah, but like you said, on our tablet, so it just came with it.
Google Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was already on mine and it knew that I had the drive. And again, that's where it asked me to put in the password. And I was to my Google Drive.
Yeah. We were talking about a little bit before the show, but there was an article on some of the blogs this morning. A former Gizmodo editor. Had his iCloud password hacked. And the bad guy, it was a pretty sophisticated bunch of bad guys, apparently. His name, Matt Honan, later admitted that his password was only 7 characters. He had set it up years ago and hadn't really thought about it since. But once they got that one password, they were able to get his Gmail password and change that. They were able to use Apple's Find My iPhone feature to remotely erase his iPhone, his iPad, and his Mac. It's one of the things that you can do with your own stuff is if somebody steals it, you can erase it so they can't get your stuff. And the bad part is if the bad guy gets your password, they can do the same to you. And a lot of the comments were really critical of him for buying into the whole Apple philosophy and for being an Apple fanboy. But then other people were trying to point out, same thing would happen with Android.
Yep.
That if someone guessed or broke into your Google account, they can remotely wipe your Android phone, they can remotely wipe your Android tablet, and they can remotely wipe your Chrome notebook. That's the problem of buying everything from one company. It doesn't matter if it's Apple or Google or Microsoft. You know, buying everything from one company, the convenience of coordinating all your stuff together can come at a price. So the article they were trying to point out was it's more about passwords than it is about stuff.
Right.
Make sure you have a good, long password that's hard for someone to guess.
Well, when I log into from my tablet or my phone, I can receive my email and calendar stuff from work. And that's on an Exchange system.
Yep.
And one of the things is when you log in, it says, this requires you to let us administer the device. And you read about administering, and it really means that they can wipe it or turn it off or do whatever they want. And the idea being that RIT requires that because that way no one can get at your confidential information.
Right. So
if you lose the phone, so you say yes, because otherwise you don't get your data.
Right.
And you agree to that because you're saying, I want it. I want to be able to get at the data. You can always say no and just not get the data. But it really means that if there were some malicious person in the at RIT, they could wipe my phone if they wanted to.
Yeah. And oftentimes that's more the
risk.
Since
I know the guys who run that, I'm not that worried, but still.
Oftentimes that's
I hope so.
That's more the risk, a disgruntled employee, than some random hacker.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you can do that with Lookout. I have Lookout running in my phone, which is an antivirus product.
Mm-hmm.
And that also has the ability to find your phone, wipe your phone, back up your phone, whatever you want to do with it. So I use that there as well. So I could always find it if it's somewhere, and I could also wipe it if I needed to.
Lookout keeps telling me I'm connected to unsecure networks. Thank you.
Yeah, we.
I kind of knew that because I connected to it, but right. It's nice to be reminded.
Good to be told.
Yeah.
Well, that did help me though. That the Lookout, because shortly after I got my new phone, I had one of those clip.
I hadn't read this before.
Wait, let him finish his story.
And I happened to drop my phone. And I got home and I realized, wait a minute. I'm trying to think of every word. Oh, wait a minute. And I quick went onto it. And with the GPS, because it was still turned on, it said, yeah, it's still sitting over at Wegmans.
There you go.
I hopped in the car, ran back over to Wegmans, because I always park away, because I don't mind the walk, and I don't want... So... There, right on the line, was my phone still in the case.
You're a lucky man.
Nobody found it.
No lie.
You're a lucky man.
I had only had it a few weeks.
Yep.
That's when I immediately went out and got myself the cases, and I've got an extra one just in case this one wears out, that it slides through my belt.
Right.
No more clips for me.
Right. Yeah, no, I absolutely get it.
So finding it in your house or finding it if you left it at the last customer is neat. And one of those finding features is always you can make the thing beep at you so you can find it. But I'm just noticing in Lookout, the command is locate and scream.
Yes, and it does.
Make your device scream. Literally a scream?
It's loud.
Okay. So, yeah, you can find out where you're at. We hear stories all the time about people who find it in the laundry hamper, or phones especially. But, okay, the geolocation says it's in my house somewhere. All right, I know that.
Yeah, right. You're at least ahead of the game that far.
There was another one about guy left it on a plane and couldn't find it before they had to let the plane take off again. So he's using the Find My iPhone and was tracking the GPS coordinates of it, and it kept going to somebody's house, and they sent the police over to the house, and the police were searching in the house and couldn't find it. And so they're doing deeper and deeper location of it, and it turned out it was in the backyard, in the grass, hiding. So, you know, his first hope was that it was a polite airline employee that was going to return it to Lost and Found when they went to work the next day.
Yeah, right.
That's the hope.
Right. Yep. But yeah, so those types of products, things like Lookout, and you can do two devices on Lookout for free, and then you have to get the pro version if you want a third or fourth device. So I have my tablet and my phone. That's really all I need.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I really like it. I have also tracked my phone when I left it somewhere. You know, it's somewhere in the house. So I'm ahead of the game that far.
Oh, okay.
The danger is that other people can track you too with your password.
Right. If they have your password.
There've been other cases about cheating spouses getting caught. You know, you call home and say I'm going uptown to work with Bill, and so she tracks your phone and you're downtown with Sally. You know.
Yeah. Right.
So don't give your password to your wife.
Well, there's that. I suppose apparently yes.
Yeah.
Well, honey, you have to have your own password. I've used my two devices.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and I see that, you know, we see that the problem really is that GPS is not that accurate. So I can find it within.
Yeah, what is it, 100 feet or something?
Yeah, I can find it within 100 feet, so I know it's in the house.
That's a good thing.
Well, yeah, I've only got 2,500 square feet to search, so.
It's
not
getting,
counting the basement
at least it's
or the
not
attic.
Stolen.
Right. You know it's not stolen. That's the important part.
It's getting more and more accurate. The government has 3-meter accuracy in their GPS systems.
Right.
So hopefully the public GPS has always been behind government and military GPS.
Right. But, yeah, so if you can get 9 feet away or 10 feet away, you're certainly
well, look at how far that's come, GPSs.
Yep.
I mean, now they're becoming standard in cars. And, I mean, just plug it in even to your smartphones and says, drive me to here. And it'll show you the arrow and it tells you when to turn even on your smartphone.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, I get lost in my own driveway and I completely admit that. I have no sense of direction. And my phone has saved my little butt more than once where I can just get on and say, this is where I need to go. And you do it all by voice, by the way.
Yep.
I have to, talking about GPSs, they can screw up big time. My daughter Melissa had to go to Syracuse last weekend. My grandson was in a soccer tournament. So they were using a GPS to get there. They finally got to the game at halftime. She was already in Syracuse, but it gave such bad directions. They didn't get to the game until halftime.
Really? Was it an Android device?
I don't know what it was, but the other lucky thing she was with, at least the coach was with her.
There you go.
So the coach was late for the game, too, and the kids were already.
You're always hearing stories about people who take the GPS instructions too literally and drive into closed roads or parking lots or drive into a lake or something. Crazy.
I have a friend who lives at the back end of nowhere. Well, you can see nowhere from where he lives. But there's really just one road to get to him on. But the road, he's the last house on the road. The road actually goes out and meets a major highway.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a landslide there a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and nobody ever cleared it up.
And the GPS doesn't know that.
So the first time we went, we started blithely up the road in about 100 yards. We made a little turn, and there was a mountain of rock in front of us. So we backed around, and we're sitting there talking about it, and some guy comes along. He says, where are you going? And I said, I'm trying to find my friend, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, yeah, it's right on the other side of that pile of rocks. Your best bet is to make a right here, go for half a mile, make a right, and then make another right, and you're at his place. I said, okay. So now we know. And one of the nice things about the Android device is one of the things it says, it's not here. So you can click that, and you can also tell it why. And so we said, there's a landslide, so fix it. Anyway, we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Sorry about that. This is the long one. We are going to do this again. You thought I knew what I was doing, didn't you? All right, we are going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. I'm going to go soak my head somewhere. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1, but you already knew that.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we've just been talking during the break about some of the features of the tablet that we've got and looking at a couple of the games. There's a bunch of free games that show off the NVIDIA graphics chip, 12-core graphics chip. And I was showing one of the games that you can see the rippling water and everything else. And you know, for a $200 tablet to show something that clean and that fast, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right, we're going to go back to the phones and talk to our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I took your advice, and I downloaded Chrome browser, and I've been very happy with it for the last month until the last few days. Now, I do watch video clips either from news websites or from YouTube, and this is what I've noticed with the Chrome browser within the last couple of days. When I hit full screen, all of a sudden there's a delay. It goes to like a black screen for 3 or 4 seconds, and it finally comes up. It seems to be out of sync. I thought maybe something with my video card or whatever, so I used the same URL, you know, the same website, used Internet Explorer, start out in the small box, hit full screen, no problem. Jumps to within a second, and it plays smoothly. Closed Internet Explorer, went back to Chrome, and the same problem occurs when I go to full screen, may it be a news website or YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know if that's changeable.
One of the things that I've run into is Google in Chrome puts their own Flash Player in. They don't use Adobe's Flash Player.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it's out of sync with the Adobe updates. So maybe a day or so between when Adobe releases an update and Google patches it. And it's probably Flash that's playing those videos.
Okay.
The other thing is when you, and I'm trying to find if there's somewhere you can change that, but you can also set it so that when you go into full screen mode, it also goes into high res mode.
Which then has to restart the download.
Which is why it takes a few seconds, and if in fact your video card can't do high res mode, that would account for the off sync.
Okay.
Whereas when you do Firefox or IE 7 or whatever,
well, I'm still running XP Home, and my machine is about a good four years old, so it's not up to par.
Yeah, so that may be where the problem is. And
but
I'm
Nick,
trying.
Last week I did not have this problem.
Well, there were updates.
Okay.
That's one nice thing about Chrome is it updates itself without telling you. One of the annoyances with Chrome is it updates itself without telling you.
Okay.
So I currently have version 21.0.1180.57. Yeah.
Chrome is the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, it is if you've got a new machine.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's really designed, as with so many new things now, it's really designed for a newer machine.
Yeah.
And if you've got an older machine, it may not be the best thing since laser sliced bread. You may have to go back to hand slicing.
Okay. Hey, one other quick question.
Or wait a couple days for the next update to fix it.
All right. So I went into settings for the Chrome browser, and I don't see anything where I can change, you know, video, or I just don't see anything there.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that's about. I'll look into it. It hasn't bothered me because I don't. On my older machines, I just don't look at YouTube.
One of my neighbors is considering buying a second 20-inch monitor that I have, and he wants to use it with his laptop to give him a larger screen to look at.
Sure.
What type of change would he have to do probably in the control panel to accommodate the external monitor, or can he use it even as a second monitor?
What is his operating system?
Sorry, say what?
What is his operating
system? I believe it's XP Home.
Should work fine.
Should find it.
There's three different...
You may have to go into the control panel under displays and say detect displays.
Right, and then there's usually three modes you can set it to. And often there's a key on your keyboard.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You, gotta
you have FN. Internal only, external only, or both.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using both monitors, they can be mirrored, so the same image is on both, like you were doing a presentation. Or they can be spanned so that you have one large desktop.
And yeah, so basically if you move the mouse from, let's say, the left laptop monitor and then you scrolled over to the other monitor, it would just automatically scroll
over.
Yeah,
on Nick's keyboard, it's F3, and you usually have to use the Alt or Function key. But usually on the keyboard, you'll see one of the Function keys will have two little monitor icons on it,
uh-huh.
And that's the key that switches between internal, external, and both.
So it's probably it is doable for him to purchase the external monitor and hook it up to his
Yeah. Now the next question is what resolution can his video card drive? And will that match the resolution
of the maximum setting is?
Okay.
Well, that doesn't mean his video card can drive it at that.
Yeah. Can we just go back really quick to the Adobe Flash? Actually, when I was talking to you, I opened up Chrome and I went to the Adobe Flash thing. It says you have version 11.3.31.222, but the player version, according to their website, is 11.3300. Sounds like I actually have a newer version than what they're telling me what I can download.
I
have 11.3.31.222, and they're saying their latest version is 11.3.300.268.
Are you on the Flash About page?
Adobe Flash. Player.
No, yeah, go to the Flash About page. It's adobe.com/software/flash/flash.
About, yes, I'm about, right. Yes, I am on about.
If you,
flash,
and
yep.
If you scroll down, it tells you what the subversions are for each browser.
Yep, Chrome.
And so Chrome for Windows is at 265.
265, and I have 31222. So my number is higher.
No.
No?
265 is higher than 222.
But I have 11331. This is 11300.
Right. So your 11.31 is much lower than 11.3300.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
So it's the whole pieces of all the numbers.
So that's weird. So Chrome should have auto-updated its own internal flash long ago. Maybe where is it? Check for updates. There's a
I'll just do it manually.
No, you can't.
I can't?
No. The Flash player for Chrome comes from Google, and you can't update it yourself. Yeah, you have to tell Chrome to search for its own updates. What version of Chrome are you running?
I'll tell you that right now. About Chrome.
About Chrome, and then there's a check for updates button in there.
Checking for updates. It's up to date. 21011806.
Well, you've got a higher version than I do on my Mac. So, for some reason, your Flash player inside of your Chrome has fallen behind.
And I cannot do this manually? I've done it with, like, Internet Explorer manually.
Because that plug-in plugs into your, plugs into your system, and the browser looks at it. The Flash browser, Flash plugin for Chrome plugs directly into Chrome from Google.
And actually, right now, it says you're... Google Chrome browser already includes Adobe Flash built-in. Google Chrome will automatically update when new versions of Flash Player are available.
So if you use a different browser to go to that plugins page, you'll get a different version.
Yeah, so...
Okay, here we go. Type Chrome colon plugins in the address bar.
Okay.
And on the plugin page Chrome. That appears, go to the Flash, and I'll post this too.
I'm sorry. Steve, can you repeat that, please?
Yeah, Chrome colon plugins.
Colon plugin...
And then find the Flash listing.
Singular or plural? Plugins or
plugins? Plural.
With no dash. It's plugins, all one word.
Plugins, okay.
Yeah, so for example, I have Flash version 11.3.31.222. Uh-huh. And Shockwave Flash 11.3R31.
Okay.
And
you can disable that and never see Flash again.
Right. And then you can go into that and you can enable or disable. I would say disable it, relaunch Chrome, and enable it, relaunch Chrome, and see if it will update its Flash.
Okay, I'll try that. And you'll post it to the Soundbites website also?
Yep.
All right.
Also, if you go to extensions and look up and type in YouTube, one of the extensions is called Magic Actions for YouTube. It allows auto HD, start all YouTube videos in HD,
mm-hmm.
and you can pick what size you want, and it automatically uses HTML5 where available instead of Flash.
Okay.
Yeah, because HTML5 is basically the replacement for Flash video, and often looks better than Flash does.
All right, I'll consider that also.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
I have 23 plugins.
Yeah.
I didn't know I had that many.
It really becomes a problem for those places that still are on Flash. A lot of the games at Yahoo, a lot of the games at Facebook are still... And I was talking to a Facebook game developer the other day, and I was saying, you know, what are you going to do? Your entire business is based on a Flash game. He said, we're going to bite the bullet and reprogram it in HTML5. We have to.
Yep.
He said, the good news is, it likely means, as near as we can figure out, it likely means that it will be faster, smaller, so quicker to download, quicker to run, and take less resources on his server.
Yep. That's what you want. And it's just, we were talking before, I don't know if we mentioned that on air, just like with the Adobe Reader. I've gone to telling folks to use Foxit.
Yep.
Instead of the Adobe one, yeah.
Yeah, instead of the Adobe one.
One of the problems with Adobe Flash is that it apparently has so many holes in it that the bad guys have a list of exploits waiting. And so Adobe releases a patch, and almost immediately there's a new exploit out. So then Adobe releases another patch, and almost immediately there's a new exploit. So Flash generally gets updated 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah.
In many cases.
And that's a problem for guys like me, because when we get an update for, you know, all of the Saunders College, we test it before we install it. So when it updates 3 times a week, I could have a guy full-time doing nothing but testing Flash.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, no.
And one of the reasons that it doesn't work well on tablets, and the primary reason that Apple never did it for the iPad, is that it's processor hungry and battery hungry.
Yep.
Who is it? John Gruber did some testing on his Android tablet, and with and without Flash. So playing HTML5 video versus playing Flash video, and he lost about 2 hours of battery out of his charge by playing the same videos in Flash versus HTML5.
Yep.
Yeah, the tablet. I played some of the YouTube stuff, and like you said, the Transformer game or movie that came with the tablet.
Yeah, and that's all HTML5. Yep. According to this, I can get 9 hours of video.
Yeah, video.
9 hours of video. Why? Because it doesn't do Flash.
That's
why.
That's one of the interesting trade-offs, that the 10-inch iPad, there's a physically bigger battery.
Right.
But it's got a bigger screen to push.
Right.
On the 7-inch, you got a smaller screen. You don't need as much battery.
Right.
So they both end up being 9 to 10 hours of battery life.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, there's the real problem is that battery technology has not kept up with every other technology.
Although it is a lot better. The lithium ion batteries we're using today. In fact, in the iPad 3, the battery's got an energy density of something of, what is it, 95 watts per cubic centimeter, whatever, however the rating
however
is. It's huge, right? And they said if the equivalent nickel metal hydride battery from 10 years ago would be the size of a school bus.
Not quite a school bus, but
a huge battery compared to what we get at lithium now.
Didn't we say, when you and I were talking, the clarity on this versus the iPad 3, because of the smaller size, I think the clarity is just good.
What they're saying is that's 260 DPI, 261 DPI.
Mm-hmm.
This is 216 DPI. But the difference in size of the screen means that essentially it's the same visually as far as the human eye can tell. It's exactly the same. So it's a retina display without calling it that.
The 7-inch screen you would typically hold a little closer to you because it's smaller. Yeah.
Right.
Like I was doing a little reading in bed last night, and holding this 7-inch tablet is a lot more comfortable. You know, just sitting there holding it in the hand.
I have a shelf I can balance mine on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but as do I. Along with a bottle of water and the cat.
Yeah,
but.
The cat sits on my head.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Stupid cat.
Or next to your head with her butt in your face.
Please.
Please.
That's going the wrong direction.
What do you do with your dogs at night? Do you lock them up?
No.
Yeah.
No.
They're, well, not lock them, but their little kennel.
Yeah, no.
Theoretically, I've been told by cat people that that's actually a compliment because it means the cat trusts you to turn her back on you.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You know, so theoretically, that's an example of trust. It still means I have cat butt in my face. That's basically what it means to me. Trust or no trust, it's cat butt.
Well, most of the time, my two dogs will stay downstairs, but every so often, Kelsey, which is my dog, will come on up, and that's when I get a rude awakening, because if I'm facing that one way when she comes up, all of a sudden I get a cold nose.
Right, oh, yeah.
It's like, what? Is there nobody else in that bed? And she, boom. Yeah. Like, oh.
I had that last night myself. Jesus. Apparently, somebody was either backfiring, setting off fireworks, something. The dogs were not impressed, so they came up to be with me. I stood up and suddenly had dogs pressed on either side of my legs. Just, I couldn't move. I'm standing there, unable to move. But eventually, we got them downstairs. My daughter woke up, got them downstairs. They were good. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Golly, that's Fahrenheit. Yes. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we're indoors where it's air conditioned on Sound Bites.
Now that we have the new air conditioning,
right.
It's so
now
sweet.
All we need is water.
Well, we don't
can't have everything.
Yes.
It's only been 2 weeks.
Yes, you can.
We were looking up energy densities. We were talking earlier about the different battery sizes. According to Wikipedia, the nickel metal hydride batteries we used to use, 10 years ago? Are about 0.2 megajoules per kilogram. The current lithium batteries are about 2 megajoules per kilogram. So it's 100 times better. So to get 9 hours out of a battery today, using yesterday's battery technology, the battery would be 100 times bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
this
amazing.
Is my iPad. What's the backpack for? Oh, the battery.
Yeah. I had a Kodak camera. One of the very first Kodak digital cameras was like that. The giant camera, huge digital sensor camera back, and the backpack with all the batteries in it.
Yep.
Well, even you look at electric cars, even the Prius and things like that. Most of the weight of the car, it's 1,000 pounds worth of batteries. They joke about it. It's 2,000 laptop batteries in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as good as the batteries have gotten over the years, they're still not quite enough to power a car that lightly.
All right, here's a news item that I fully agree with. Telemarketers, spam messages, apps that crash. The list of cell phone annoyances can go on, but according to a new survey from the Pew Internet and American Life Project, some of the most common cell phone complaints include slow download speeds and dropped calls, among other things. The survey of 2,254 adults conducted from March 15th to April 3rd found that 77% of the people who use the internet on their phone experience slow download speeds that prevent them from downloading things as quickly as they would have liked. 46% said they stare at a slow loading screen on their phone at least weekly. Meanwhile, 72% of cell phone owners experience dropped calls at least occasionally, with 32% noting they encounter this issue a few times a week or more frequently. Meanwhile, a lucky 26% of respondents said they never experienced dropped calls. I'm one of those. I don't know that I've ever dropped a call, have I? I don't think so. As mobile owners become fond of just-in-time access to others and as their expectations about getting real-time information rise, they depend on the cell phone's technical reliability. Any problems that snag, stall, or stop users from connecting to the material and people they seek is at least a hassle to them, and sometimes is even more disturbing than that in this network world. Unwanted sales and marketing calls are another common issue, according to the survey. Some 68% of cell owners said that they have found themselves on the line with a telemarketer, with 24% encountering these calls at least a few times a week. Meanwhile, 69% of texters have received spam or other unwanted messages, with 25% noting they face this problem at least weekly. Overall, the survey found that some 88% of American adults now own a cell phone. 55% of cell phone owners use their phone to go online. So what's your biggest cell phone annoyance? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I've been getting more and more junk texts lately, and it's really annoying because I pay for each text.
Right.
I might have to end up getting a plan. I don't send that many texts, so I haven't bothered with a plan. I may have to, just to stop paying for junk text.
Well, I got a junk phone call that I ignored because I saw it come in, and wait, I don't know this one. So I wound up putting up, it was an advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my phone, you know, I registered my cell phone as, you know, do not, you know, call list.
Yeah, they don't care anymore.
Yeah, it's like, so I put
see, the way they get around it is now that you've answered the phone, you have established a relationship.
I didn't know.
With those people. So
my answering part, my answering machine did on it.
Right. But that's a problem that a lot of people are having. One of the nice things that I like about my phone is when I give out my number, it's my Google Voice number. And I don't ever have to answer the phone. And when I get a text or a voicemail, I can then simply block that person.
Yep.
I can block that caller so they never, ever hear of me ever again. Or I never hear from them
ever
again.
But a lot of times, those, they come from call centers with hundreds of lines, each with a different number.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
What I do is I don't ever give people my cell phone number anymore.
Okay, right.
I give them my Google Voice number.
Oh, okay.
So when a text message or voicemail comes from Google Voice, it then comes to my phone, and if I don't recognize the number,
uh-huh,
I just let it go to Google Voice. At which point, I can now say, oh, block that person. I've been getting a phone call from a company in Washington. I'm not going to answer a phone call from a company in Washington. I don't know anyone in Washington. Unless, of course, it turns out to be Microsoft wanting to offer me the presidency of Microsoft. And then I feel sad that I've missed that call. Barring that, I don't really need to hear anybody, and I haven't bothered to even check.
Or they want you to come out and speak on security.
Yeah,
but
I haven't paid attention to whether
flight.
It's Washington State or Washington, D.C.
Yep.
I just don't even care. But the point is, I can then block those people.
Oh, okay, thank you.
I can block them either as voicemails or as text or whatever, and I never hear from them again.
We get a lot of those home phone. And most of them are out of state and solicitors, but one of them keeps saying Democrat and Chronicle, and they call 3 times a day. If I would have subscribed to your paper, I'm not going to know.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
Actually, all we want is the Sunday paper because we want the coupons. Unfortunately, newspapers are one of those dying businesses. You get more accurate and more timely news on the internet, but we like the coupons on Sunday.
Right.
So I think my wife just said that she did find that they are doing a Sunday only subscription. Especially now that the Sunday paper is $3 at the newsstand.
Here's a tip for everybody listening. At least it used to, and then Elaine re-recorded it, and so I have to re-record it again. Our answering machine message used to start with the three tones that indicated an out-of-service phone. Do, do, do. Right? So anytime it was a robocall, they hang up and kill your number.
Nice.
Thank you. You're welcome, America. You are welcome, America.
You should put that out there, that ringtone, and charge, 50 cents.
Yeah, sure.
Put it out there with your name, you know, for 50 cents.
Download half a buck, and here it is, and you're on your way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really worked. I mean, I'm late doing it now because it's the presidential 600 phone calls a frickin' night now. But last time for the 2008 election, we started getting a whole series of phone calls, and then they stopped because they hire maybe 4 or 5 companies to do all of these things. They get my number, they call my number, they hear the out of service tone, and take my number off their list. Thank you.
You know, one of the ones that's ticking me off that's all of a sudden spamming me with a lot of stuff is Louise Slaughter. I'm getting a lot of emails and all this other stuff. I didn't sign up for it, and I don't want it.
That's right. You may think of any political candidate,
yeah,
if you didn't sign up for it, it's spam.
Yes, it is. I did not request to knowing what she wants. So I've got it as junk now.
Years ago, I used to get message after message after message from George W. Bush. Pretty sure it wasn't him specifically. Thanking me for my generous contribution to the Republican Party. Wow. Wow.
Did your wife know that you were contributing?
No, she's not the only one who didn't know. Never mind. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. We've got Bill from Rochester patiently waiting on the line. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hi, you guys. We are about to get our first Android phone.
Good for you.
And we're down to two choices. The Samsung Galaxy S2 for $100 that has gingerbread, or the S3, which is $200 and has ice cream sandwich. In a two-year commitment, what would be the best way to go?
That's always one of the hardest things in the Android market is there's going to be a better phone in 3 months.
Yeah.
And you're stuck in a two-year commitment.
Well, except that if you're going to be stuck in it, you're never stuck in a two-year commitment, by the way.
Yeah, you can always pay the early termination fee.
Well, no, you can always buy your own phone at full price and have them switch the number. But given that you're not going to want to spend full price, $600 for a phone, my suggestion has always been buy the newest.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have it for 2 years. By the time you're done, you're that much farther ahead because the S3 is a year newer than the S2.
It looks like the S3's got better camera software built in.
Well, it's a better phone all the way around. I'm very impressed by the S3. I was impressed by the S2, I'm more impressed by the S3.
Oh, here's something. Battery again. The S3 has a higher density battery, but it lasts less time.
Because it does more,
yeah.
Right.
Well, would it last longer if you didn't use a lot of those other options?
Yeah.
Turn those other options off.
Well, I have found that the battery on my phone lasts a lot longer now that I'm doing a lot of that stuff on the tablet.
Because I wasn't sure because online, currently they say that gingerbread has like 65% of the market, and it seems like it would take a number of years for that 65% and dwindle down.
The big problem with that is that most phones don't upgrade their OS. So, you know, you buy a phone with gingerbread, it's going to stay on gingerbread for that 2 years. In fact, we had a statistic a few weeks ago. One Android developer did a test on his website where he logged all of the OS versions of all the phones connecting to his website. And in a six-month period, he had 5,000 different versions of operating system connect to his website.
Yeah. The problem is when you have a device like, for example, the Nexus line of devices, the Nexus 7 tablet, the Nexus phone, Google uploads those directly.
Okay.
But that's actually not necessarily true of the phone. My phone is on Verizon, and Verizon decides when I will get ice cream sandwich.
Okay.
Both Samsung and whoever your provider is will decide when you upgrade the 2 to ice cream sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
The 3, on the other hand, should be better off.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help. That really cleared things up.
Yeah, I personally would go with the newer.
Okay.
Especially since you're going to have it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, and I hope you guys have a good rest of the summer.
And enjoy your Android phone. Let us know what you think.
All righty.
Okie doke.
Take care, you guys.
You too.
I found an interesting website that VentureBeat that lets you compare different phones. And you can see the technical details of each phone as well, which is kind of neat.
What's the operating system in the S3?
2.3. So, the S2 is 2.3. The S3 is 4.0.
Yeah, that's
but interesting. The S2 uses the Android interface. The S3, they've put TouchWiz on.
TouchWiz.
Can you get rid of TouchWiz and go back to Android?
I don't know. I haven't played enough with the S3 to know that.
This is Samsung.
The other problem is that a lot of the manufacturers throw their own front end over Android. Some of them are lovely. Some of them are crap.
Mm-hmm. Can you get this directly from Google, or do you have to get it from a carrier?
Well, that's an interesting question. You're welcome.
You probably pay full price. And interestingly,
it's good that he's asking interesting questions.
In some cases, you can simply buy a phone.
The S3 is $550, and the S2 is $600 without contract. That's weird. Right.
So if you were to pay $550 for something like from, for example, you walk into a Best Buy or a Radio Shack or something like that and buy a phone, you can then get it put on your Verizon account or your Sprint account or your whatever account.
But you're not tied to a contract.
Well, you maintain whatever contract you have. So, for example, my phone, my contract is still all you can eat. I have unlimited data. Next time I buy a phone, that contract goes away if I buy it at the cheaper price.
Okay. Because you'll have to get a new contract.
Because I have to get a new contract. But if I go out and buy my own phone and bring it into Verizon and say, here's my phone, all I want to do is transfer the thing. I'm not buying your phone. This is my phone. Just make the change. They tell me, this is of course only theoretical because I haven't actually done it, they tell me I get to keep my old data plan. And if that's true, it's actually, the way I use my phone, it's cheaper. Actually cheaper for me to buy a full price phone and put it on my contract, my unlimited data contract, than it is for me, and this is just me, it's the way I use my phone and everything else, than for me to buy the phone and go to the not all-you-can-eat data plan.
Yeah, AT&T and Verizon have both announced shared data plans. So if you have three or four devices, which is common even for one person, but in a family now, you can get shared data between them. And most people are finding out that the shared data plans are actually going to cost them more than buying individual plans.
Didn't I say that at the beginning? They're not. The phone companies are not altruistic. They're not interested in you saving money. They're interested in them making money. Pay attention. That's the way it works. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. It's 1:39 p.m. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're having a heat wave.
No,
the tropical heat wave.
Tomorrow, the same thing, isn't it? 90, I think, tomorrow, too.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I want to talk for just a minute about Google Fiber. As you know, and Steve doesn't want to hear about this.
Well, we've been arguing about, well, not arguing, but lusting after Fios, Verizon Fios, for how many years now?
Yeah.
Now we can lust over Google Fiber, and it will never come to Rochester.
Well, now listen to this, though. First, in Kansas City, they did that as a test market, and now they're talking about going into New York City.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
Well, yeah, I ain't kidding. What Google did was said, look, you have to get X percentage of your neighborhood. I don't remember what X is. It's a fairly low number, but it's X percentage of every neighborhood has to sign up before we'll run fiber to you. As it turns out, 70% of every neighborhood they went into in Kansas City has signed up as an intent to get Google fiber. So now they're looking at New York, and I have read an announcement. And I don't, you know, it hasn't been verified yet, but I have read an announcement that they are aggressively going to bring Google Fiber into every city that does not have Verizon Fios. If that's true.
I'm clicking on the pre-register button right now.
If that's true, I would like to personally thank Verizon for never having come to Rochester.
Well, the theory is Frontier's got all this fiber, especially downtown, that just no one uses.
A lot of dark fiber. It was in the basement of our original radio station.
Oh, yeah.
Fiber just sticking out of the wall.
That's right.
There's a loop around the inner loop.
Yep.
So all of those buildings are somehow connected.
What a waste.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
What a waste. To put in the time, material, and man hours that it took to put that in.
But if Google does come to Rochester, they may be able to buy that fiber, which saves them money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's certainly got to be cheaper than running it themselves. So there's
Estimate on what it costs a month?
And yes.
Limits and
yes.
5 megabit is free.
5 megabit down, 384K up is free, as in no cost, zero cost, zero huh? no, zero cost.
Huh?
If you want symmetrical, okay. 1 gigabit up and down, it's $70 a month. Yes, please, all day long. If you want to add television to that, it's $120 a month.
Time Warner, watch out.
Everybody watch out. Everybody watch out. Now, you don't get local channels. You can still get Channel 10 and Channel 8, but you get
the
NBC
antenna.
Feed.
Yeah.
Right, you get the NBC feed, the CBS feed, the ABC feed. Right, and you can put up an antenna if you want the local channels. But the point here is that Google is really, so far at least, being aggressive about this. And there's more to it than that. If you go to the pricing, they'll show you what the plans are. And if you get the gigabit Ethernet, you also get their box, which is essentially their router.
What if you want, say, a plan where I'm not too worried about my upload speed as much as I am, I want more download?
Those are the three choices they give you.
Okay.
What is it?
Five meg down for zero and 1,000 meg down.
It's a gigabit
for 70.
$70 a month, a gigabit down and up.
Damn.
And they give you the network box.
Wow.
The network box has 4 gigabit Ethernet ports and wireless. If you get the full package, the $120 package. They give you a Nexus 7. They give you the network box. They give you a storage box with 2 terabytes of data.
And a 1 terabyte Google Drive.
And 1 terabyte on Google for the
Can
Google
Drive.
Can you imagine? I think they give you that on the $70 one as well.
I didn't see
this
that.
This has got to scare both Time Warner and Frontier drastically.
Yeah.
I mean, for folks that are paying
it's
what they are
Cox
a month.
Communications and everybody else.
For 5 gig, to get 5 gig free?
Now, you won't get that unless enough people in your neighborhood have signed up for the others, but tell me about it. Who's not going to sign up for that?
I'm paying, one of the plans maybe $30 a month, and now all of a sudden I can get 5 gig for free?
Yeah.
I'm paying $30 or free.
Yeah.
I'm paying more than that now for 10 megabit.
I'd be going up
megabit.
And down my neighborhoods and, passing out flyers like you wouldn't believe.
And $70 a month for gigabit up and down, which means I can put a server in my house and get gigabit connectivity to that server. Yes, please.
Wow. And no data caps.
And no data caps. None. Zero caps.
That's why I'm awful leery. You can get my hopes up too high because, like I say, Time Warner and Frontier, that would be such a big loss.
They'll get together and get some local politician to pass a law against Google.
Well, yes, they will. And a lot of cities are already starting to do something like that. And I believe that Google will continue to have caps.
Now,
because what Google wants is our data. And I do understand that.
Yes.
They want to know where we're going and how we're going there and what we're doing
so they can sell
us ads.
Yep.
And they're never going to cap it because the amount of data you use, the more you use, the more valuable you are to
them. And like you say, if you want a gigabyte for $70... But, I mean, just for folks getting free 5 gig?
Meg.
Or 5 megabytes.
For free.
Hello? That's more than most folks are getting right now, or some folks that, are still on dial-up. You imagine these folks that have the dial-up plans that are, maybe only paying $10 a month.
Well, one of the things that we keep hearing from various vendors of internet access is that it's important for students nowadays to have internet access for classwork.
Virtually required.
So we have a big gap between the haves and the have-nots. If you can get it for free, there aren't going to be a whole lot of have-nots. Right. Is it going to be as fast? No. Is it faster than dial-up? Oh, hell yes.
Hell yeah.
So that's not really a question. That's not really a problem. So what we really need, and if there's anybody from Google listening, and I have a number of friends who work at Google, so if any of you are getting this, please, Google, consider us.
And because there's a lot of unused fiber, your construction costs are going to be lower.
Construction costs are going to be lower. And this is a very high-tech town, so I guarantee you there's a lot of neighborhoods that are going to want Google Fiber. And I'll tell you right now, I'll sign up immediately. You need a spokes individual in Rochester. That should be me, and I should get it for free. But even beyond that, we should have this in Rochester because we are a high-tech town.
And that means that they could put up free wireless internet all over the city.
Exactly.
Yep.
I mean,
no
instead of this right to. Now, the city, you know, Kansas, if you want to get into their thing that you got to, you know, pay so much in that. Again, the other folks that, you know.
If I'm paying my $70 a month, I've got some form of username and password. And it's probably linked to my Gmail account. So I could put in my Gmail information when I log in wirelessly all over the city. There's a deal. There's a deal that makes me happy. Anyway.
And going back to something we were talking about earlier, this Google Fiber webpage is a really cool HTML5 webpage with animations and videos.
Yep, and it's all HTML5. Oh. All the stuff you used to have, this really heavy wait for it to download flash page.
Yep.
Bam, 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 up it comes. It's all HTML5. Very, very cool. HTML5 is the future. If you're not using a web browser that does HTML5, you're missing some stuff.
Which all of them do these days.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be so huge.
Now, this is interesting. I'm on the Google Fiber page in Google Chrome. Is it going to show me anything different if I am not using Chrome?
Well, it depends. Does your thing do HTML5? That's really where the question lies. Does your browser do HTML5?
But I wonder if they optimize it for Chrome.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that would be so beneficial to... I mean, and I'm sure Steve has a bunch of clients, too, that, I mean, I have to bring their computers back because they still are on dial-up.
Yeah.
Limited budgets and everything else, and they can only...
And believe me, I understand that.
And they can only pay, you know, say $9.95 a month for dial-up. To turn around, and Google is so smart in grabbing... I tell you what, we'll give it to you for free. You can get 5 megabytes. And like you say, gather their information. Because they're online, they're doing their shopping, and that may be not as active, but... Wow.
You know what? I'm on 5 megabits, and it's fine. You know, you may want to laugh about it, but it's fine. I don't have a problem at all.
Me neither. I mean, we use that for the shop, and, you know, it's fine.
We were at a friend's house a couple of weeks ago. We'd just seen Prometheus, and then we went back to his house. Well, let's watch Alien, to the next, you know, chronology. So he didn't have Alien handy.
Sure.
We didn't want to run back to our house to get it. Oh, well, Amazon Instant Streaming. $2.99, okay. Estimated download time, 7 hours.
Yes. Huh.
So then we watched something else and came back to it. Estimated download time, 9 hours. What?
Yeah, that's
the problem.
He said
it took 3 days to download.
Yeah, that's the problem with those things. And you're right. If it's gigabit, estimated it's done.
Yeah.
But we can only...
And so are we.
And so are we. Good segue. All right. Well, that music tells me that we're done for another week. And please, Google, call me. You have my Google Voice number. Give me a call. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. And for those of you who did not call in, I don't know why not. Think of all the fun we just had. But we'll be here again next week to do it one more time. So you've only got just shy of 7 full days for the next episode of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Stay tuned because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Linda, at least, will be here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll see you next week with sound bites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.